Chapter 19. The earth rumbled under the Khan's feet. Ever since he had arrived in the reflecting caves, the tremors had been getting worse. Cracks snaked up the vast walls of the cavern, showering more dust onto an already choked floor. Tunnel mouths dotted the perimeter, some of them still adorned with their old ceremonial archways, some dissolved into rubble.
So, there are ways back up, he thought.
He paced, first away from the seated Magnus, then back towards him. A blend of emotions battled away within him. Anger, mostly, but also guilt.
I should have gone with you to Nykaia, he said.
Magnus looked equivocal.
Perhaps that was the beginning of our censure. But I don't know if you'd have helped, Jagatai. How many of our brothers trust you more than me?
Horus ordered me away, said the Khan.
Did he?
There are no accidents here. I was kept away. I am sure of it.
He felt like breaking something.
It should have been the three of us. The angel, you, and me.
Magnus sighed.
It's done, brother. Leave it. All that matters now is the future.
There is no future,
the Khan snapped, half raising his blade. Magnus looked at the Tao's edge with a strange expression.
We were working for something better than this.
Were we? Gilliman, perhaps. Lorgar, too, in his own warped way. But you weren't. You were there for the hunt.
It kept us pure.
It kept you away.
Magnus smiled.
You were so easy to keep out of the conversation. I was there the whole time. I just didn't hear the words being whispered.
The Khan stared hard at him, feeling an edge of sickness in the pit of his stomach.
Where are you, Magnus? He asked. This isn't you.
Just as he had done before, Magnus paused. He looked around him, as if seeing something different to what the Khan was seeing.
I am not whole,
Magnus breathed.
I am no longer bound in place. I am distributed.
We used to talk of demons. Yaksha. You told me they were just dreams and not to worry, for human ingenuity was the cure for all ills.
Magnus shook his head, looking troubled.
Did I say that?
Are you become a Yaksha, brother?
Magnus's eye snapped up to his.
Maybe I have, or something like one. There is a price, you see, for bargains. They do not let you forget.
His forehead wrinkled as he concentrated.
I see a mirror world to this one. I see coal black rock. I see a sky lit with sorcerous fire. I am there, I think. That is where myself resides. All that remains here on the world that raised me is an echo.
His countenance hollowed in distress.
How many echoes are there on other worlds, in other places?
The Khan started to move, to circle slowly, keeping the blade's tip between him and the apparition.
Yasugai told me you were too enamored of the warp,
he said, trying not to let his sense of revulsion get the better of him.
You let it make you sick. It was a tool, Magnus. It can be used, but only carefully. Limit yourself, I said.
Magnus nodded miserably.
I remember.
Take the modest amount. Sip at the cup, but leave the dregs. This is the law of Chogoris. You, even you, laughed at that.
Magnus's mouth curled in a half sneer.
Chogoris,
he muttered.
So proud of your home world. Nothing on Mundus Planus but emptiness.
It made us, just as Prospero made you. Chthonia made Horus, and Caliban made the lion. We are not just the sons of the Emperor. We were the sons of 20 worlds, each as different as jewels.
You know, of course, that Nostramo is already ashes. Olympia lies in ruins, and the lion's homeworld is headed the same way. You can see what happened to mine. What do you suppose will stop Chogoris being consumed in the fire?
All things pass.
Magnus looked scornful. His face seemed to be distorting, as if locked underwater.
Change. That is the only constant. Change, change, change.
He got to his feet, shakily, reaching to the carcass of his great telescope to steady himself.
I'm glad you came to see me, Jagatai. We always saw eye to eye, you and me. You were brittle, but at least you spoke the truth. Unlike that bastard Russ. Do you know what he is underneath? Do you have any idea what Lehman Russ really hides inside those furs and totems? Here's a clue. His space wolves have to cover their every axe blade with runes, lest they scream their nightmares into the void. Is that natural?
The Khan held his ground, tensing.
Enough, brother.
Magnus laughed.
You don't want to know. That's always been your weakness. I know it all now. I could tell you the Emperor's name, and it would surprise you. I could tell you that the fates decreed Fulgrim to be sent to Chogoris, and you to Chemos. And I could tell you which arcane force in the universe prevented it.
He took a step, then another, towards the Khan.
Do you wish to know where you will die, Kargan? Do you wish to know on what world and in which dimension your soul will find its ending?
These things are not known.
All is known.
The Khan looked at him warily.
You told me I had a choice. My fate, all fate, is still to be written.
Magnus grinned. His eyes seemed to be weeping, though it was hard to tell whether it was with tears or blood.
Stories may meander, but the endings never change. Believe me, I have witnessed the authors.
He shuddered.
They are terrible,
he whispered. By now he was only inches away from the sword.
I have what I came for, brother, said the Khan. You can only give me one piece of knowledge that I truly desire.
Magnus inclined his head.
And what is that?
How to restore you.
Magnus started. For a moment he looked truly bewildered, as if he had expected mockery and received sincerity, or perhaps the other way around. He looked down at his hands, then around at the devastation of his kingdom. Misery mingled with confusion.
I am corrupted,
he whispered, as if realizing it all over again.
Restore me, and I shall become a lord again. I shall be the Crimson King, free to rule over a world of spells and vengeance. The galaxy may live to rue that.
You were my friend, said the Khan quietly.
Magnus looked at him, and for a moment, just a moment, the old dignity was there, etched upon a ravaged face and glimmering in the dark.
Then,
he said,
I judge you know what to do.
The Khan nodded and pulled his sword round for the strike. Slivers of witchlight skittered along the rune-wound steel.
Until we meet under starlight, he promised.
Sooner than you might think,
said Magnus, making no effort to evade the blow. The Khan swung, and the Tao glittered through the air, whispering as it came. When it hit Magnus's outline, the ghostly shell shattered, spilling into 1,000 pieces like broken glass. A wild crack rang out, a steely snap, followed by a shriek like a child's cry. The dust around him billowed up in a cloud, swirling and writhing. The Khan was momentarily blinded and staggered back. The ground trembled. A low rumbling broke out from deep within the earth. What remained of the brass instruments danced and shivered, and the broken lens pieces skittered across the bare rock. Then, slowly, the tumult subsided. The phantasmal light faded away, followed by the howl of unnatural wind. After that, all that remained were the broken things of Magnus's creation, now sunk into real shadow, forlorn and battered by the maelstrom. The Khan stayed where he was for a moment, breathing heavily. The hollowness still plagued him, the numb feeling of having discovered the full extent of treachery.
There is only one unforgivable lie.
His heart beat sluggishly. His blade felt leaden in his fist.
That is the lie that says, this is the end. You are the conqueror. You have achieved it. And now all that remains is to build walls higher and shelter behind them. Now, the lie says, the world is safe.
The Khan bowed his head.
All emperors are liars.
He remained still, as gaunt and lean as a hunting hound, his cloak hanging stiffly about him. He did not move. He felt as though moving, even by a fraction, might break what remained. Around him, the reflecting caves sighed with emptiness, their majesty in tatters. At least amidst all the numbness, the truth was now known. The choice could be made, for the traitor had been unmasked. Duty could now be done. The call to war could be given. But for all that, still he did not stir. The dream had died. Ilya glanced up towards Hasek's position, and nothing she saw gave her any reassurance. She looked around at the bridge, as if for the first time, watching the multitudes at work, trying to see if any of them were as unnerved as she was. The Swordstorm's command nexus was a truly colossal space, big enough to accommodate the hundreds of crew responsible for monitoring and guiding the battleship into combat. Its ridged walls soared away on either side of a cavernous interior, each one studded with terraces glowing brightly from the light of picta screens. Lumen-banded pillars 5 meters in diameter thrust up from the marble floor, terminating in the far distance of the vaulted ceiling. A whole series of platforms ran away from her vantage, each one housing a different cluster of White Scar's officer serfs, or Mechanicum tech priests. The entire space was dominated by the enormous arch over the far observation deck. Prospero's horizon curve was visible through the armor glass, dark as smoke and angry with snarled cloud cover. Lightning ran across the upper atmosphere, like dancing tongues of silver. Ilya swept her gaze back to Hasek. He was busy at a sensor pillar under the arch, surrounded by glimmering hololiths and gesturing incessantly. Servitors and mortal crews scurried to comply with whatever orders he was giving them. Dozens came and went, bowing and proffering data slates. Halji stood beside her, saying nothing, sunken into an expectant silence. Ilya turned to her own screens. Ships were still moving out of the deployment pattern. The Kuo Fian had withdrawn to the far side of the planet. 2 smaller frigates had broken off contact entirely after a series of strange vox bursts. She ran an auger sweep, and it was then that she first saw them. 4 large ships heading in-system fast. They looked to be just minutes out of maximum resolution, and their Auspex profiles still scattered the feed with interference. It was possible that they would be accompanied by smaller vessels too, as yet invisible to the fleet's sensors.
"Have you seen this, Halji?"
she asked, pointing to the rune glyphs. Halji nodded.
"Incoming ships?"
"They have no identifiers," said Ilya, frowning. "They're big. Thrown their battleships.
It is under control.
It's not bloody well under control.
Ilya felt like hammering her fists on Halji's armour. He was so calm, so unconcerned.
You're sitting around like you've...
She did not say arranged it yourself. She glanced up at Hasek again. He was surrounded by 24 white scars in heavy battle plate, stationed around the edge of the observation deck like an honour guard. The Noyan Khan showed no signs of surprise, nor did anyone around him.
"We have to raise shields," she said firmly.
"That is the Noyan Khan's decision."
"It's procedure."
Halji avoided looking at her. Ilya thumped her fist into the picked feed and felt it flex.
"Damn you, Halji, what's going on?"
Halji shook his head.
"Calm yourself, Zhu. All will become apparent."
He was like a rock-crete wall. With a sudden lurch of realization, she realized that Halji was not her ally and her guide. He was her chaperone. She could no more have escaped his attention than she could outrun a jet bike. She whirled back to the nearest screen, her cheeks burning with anger. Runes swam across the console before her, each one indicating a ship shifting out of position.
"Where is the Khan?"
she muttered, her fingers dancing across the controls. The four ship signals kept tracking across the void, heading with remorseless efficiency towards the White Scars formations. Just as at Chondax, the entire fleet seemed incapable of responding to them. She ran an augmented sweep on the signals, pulling them to a different monitor. Grainy images resolved. It was hard to tell from the distorted profiles, but the ships looked grey. Pale grey, like the images of Luna she had seen so many times on propaganda picts. She killed the feed, despairing of making sense of it. Then, just as she was about to look away, she detected a familiar signature edging towards the Swordstorm. The Kaljian, one of the smaller attack frigates, one of the last she had pulled into muster before the Alpha Legion had attacked. It was not so much drifting into range as sidling. Ilya glanced up at Halji, whose attention had shifted to Hasek again. He didn't notice her and was not checking the picked feeds. She almost said something, then changed her mind. The Khan was still out of contact, and matters were clearly being run by others. It was up to her to decide who was acting in whose best interests. She kept her head down. She said nothing. Carefully, trying to remain as calm as possible, she started to work. One by one, the Swordstorm's defensive schematics began to scroll down the console. Quinjar hunkered down in the rubble. His targeting system still gave him nothing. The rest of the squad crept through the darkness, hugging close to the twisted heaps of debris. Above them, Prospero's unquiet skies cracked and grumbled. He could already see the column, standing like a sliver of bone amidst the swirling dust. Just one more barricade to clear, and they would be back in the square.
"In position,"
he voxed to Arvida.
"Whenever you're ready," replied the Thousand Suns Legionary.
Quinjar checked the location of his battle brothers. 8 runes blinked on his retinal display, each within 5 meters. Bolters were no use, he had decided, so his warriors went into battle with tulwars or glaives or lightning claws, all of them wreathed in the crackling discharge of electric blue energy fields.
"Stay close," he warned,
slowly turning his 2 curved blades.
"Secure the pillar. Then I will try to get a location reading."
He broke from cover, loping over the broken terrain and skirting the worst of the wreckage. His squad did the same, streaking out into Prospero's eternal night. They went low, silent, like wolves on the scent. Arvida took up position in the midst of them. He travelled more stealthily than the Terminators, knowing the terrain perfectly and not hindered by their massive armour shells. His gauntlets were already glowing with slivers of warp fire, lighting up his battered crimson plate. Quinjar was the first into the square, Its surface was more pitted and treacherous than it had been before, with ravines running across the pockmarked rockcrete and huge areas slumped down into smoking craters. He ghosted across the remains, keeping his blades raised the whole time. As he went, his blood pumped hard around his system. There was nothing but silence surrounding him. It could have been the underworld itself. Then, just as the central column drew into range, he heard the first trace of buzzing. He whirled around to see a Sagnuene materialize over him, coalescing instantly as if sucked from the atmosphere itself. He saw the trailing limbs, the mandibles clicking, the swollen brain parts. Just as before, the creature was translucent and glowing like corpse gas. It swooped at him, plunging fast, wings blurring. Quinja braced, waiting for the impact. At the last moment, he struck upwards, aiming for the narrow waist between thorax and abdomen. The Psychnuene blundered blindly into the path of his swords. Both blades hit their target, sinking without resistance into etheric matter. Quinja immediately felt the awful draining cold that made his muscles seize and his mind lock. Then he heard Arvida cry out, and a bolt of something like lightning slammed into the insectoid body. The glowing exoskeleton instantly hardened, solidifying like ice freezing. Chitinous membranes clustered into being, membranes toughened, fluids pumped. Quinjar's blades now bit, and he sliced them both crossways. The Psychnuene screamed, and its body severed. Sticky residue slapped across Quinjar's helm. The buzzing became a strangled flail. By then he was moving again, leaping away from the disintegrating creature's carcass. Other Psychnuene had spun into the square and were lurching towards the Terminators with the same eerie blindness as before. This time, when they latched on, Arvida was ready. Positioned in the centre of the squad, he opened his gauntlet and sent bolts of warp fire crashing into them. When the bolts hit, the half-corporeal creatures crystallized into physicality. Once in that state, the white scars could take them on. Quinjar ran quickly, spinning out of contact with a reeling Psychnuene and charging towards another. Just as he crashed into contact, its shell hardened, ready to receive the cut of his energy field. The creature reeled, its abdomen slit open and leaking. Quinjar pressed the attack, making his blades whir. He eviscerated it in three savage cuts, snickering the swords in tight switchbacks, slashing the warp beast apart and leaving it in chunks. He felt a cold rush of satisfaction. This was fighting he could undertake. He was faster than them. He was sharper. More materialized, first a few, then dozens. The cluster above them became a swarm, all drawn by the presence of live souls encroaching upon their domain. Ever stranger creatures emerged among them. Giant scarabs with glossy outsized shells, towering mantids that scuttled across the rock, vespid-like beasts with engorged twin stings. Prospero's bizarre menagerie of psychic fauna resurrected jerkily around them, shimmering with spectral evanescence. Bloated cranial mounds glowed, multifaceted eyes glinted sightlessly. Arvida worked hard, throwing bolt after bolt at the emerging horrors. The white scars kept fighting, hacking their way towards the pillar, their blades dripping with luminescent ichor. Quinjar saw Garul plough straight through a newly solidified Psychnuene, his glaive whirring with incredible speed. Rojian ripped a scarab apart with his claws, drenching himself in glistening liquids as the hard shell blew apart. But the numbers began to tell. As Quinjar reached the faint shadow of the column, one of the wasp-like insectoids came right at him. Arvida was slow to respond, and Quinjar's blades whipped through nothing. He felt his soul tug agonizingly and tried to withdraw. The thing pressed into him, sweeping its grotesque stingers around for the kill. Quinjar lunged, aiming at the closest curved spike. At the last moment, Arvida cracked a bolt into the wasp's body. One of Quinjar's blades severed the solidified stinger. The other jutted deep into its thorax. He wrenched both blades outwards, ripping the creature open. By then, more were coming in. Kaghoon was gripped by one of the mantids, his soul wrenched from his body before Arvida could react. The warrior's unearthly screams lingered as the diminished squad fought on towards the centre of the square. The spectres kept on materialising, bursting into ghoulish life from all directions, spilling out of the air. Arvida worked frantically, lighting up the skies with his sorcery, but it was not quick enough. Still, there was no signal, no location reading for the Khan. Qinjar moved with all the speed of his heritage, driving the Terminator plate hard and making the servos whine. His blades plunged and darted, evading the glowing forms of the ethereal and stabbing unerringly into the solidified flesh of the corporeal. His mind fixed into a tight vice of concentration. All he saw was the movement, the strikes and the angles, bleeding out of the night like iridescent nightmares. The warriors of the Keshig withdrew into a tight huddle, protecting Arvida even as his witchery allowed them to fight. The broken column reared up at their backs, severed and implacable.
"We cannot hold for much longer," Arvida foxed coolly.
"Stay where you are,"
grunted Qinjar, scything his blades into the path of a scuttling mantid, slicing its limbs open and sending it crashing to the ground.
"He must be close."
He heard a buzz and spun to his right, decapitating a Psyche-Nuin streaking in just above waist height. The blow was judged expertly, but Arvida's warp craft had not completed properly, and before Qinjar could pull the swords away, he felt the icy pull of the ether. He jerked away, but too slowly. Another Psyche-Nuin came out of the dark, as translucent as smoked glass. It swerved in on Qinjar. He had no time. Arvida was now occupied with his own fight. His warriors could not help. With a sudden lurch, Qinjar knew that he could do nothing to protect himself.
"Kagan!"
he roared defiantly, bracing for impact. The creature blasted apart, spinning into a thousand fragments that sailed high across the ruins. Wing fragments and body parts burned like stars before blazing out, sending a shockwave screaming across the square and making the dust dance. The air itself seemed to rip apart, scattering Psyche-Nuin and sending them tumbling. A tall figure stood on the far side of the annihilated phantasms, silhouetted against the dull burn of Prospero's long death agony. His sword glowed with etheric residue, as though dipped in molten iron. His fine armour was crusted with dirt and dust, much of it smouldering red-hot. The spectres hung back then, their will suddenly wavering. The swarm fell away, rising clear of the new blade in their midst. For a second, lost in shock, Qinjar just stared at the newcomer, breathing heavily. Then the armoured figure spoke, and all became clear.
"Leave them, Shah,"
growled the Khan, striding after the retreating horrors, his long Dao blade shimmering, his armour's trim glinting like newly mined gold.
"You can't hurt them. I can."
The Khaljin pulled into strike range, and the shadow of the sword storm rippled over it. Waiting just inside the open hangar doors, Shaban looked up at the vastness of the hull as it slid through the void, blotting out the stars beyond. He observed the engine housings, the ventral shield generators, the flank lances, all embellished with ornate las emplacements and close-range cannons. His Brotherhood were mounted and ready. They lined up in ranks on the hangar deck. 500 bikes growled and spat as their engines revved to their full pitch. Sujutsu-patterned void bikes were larger and more brutal than the Scimitar-class machines, with enclosed thrusters and a far more potent power source. They were more like one-man fighters than speeders, and an armor-sealed White Scars legionary could use them for short bursts in the void, just as other legions used their speeders for atmospheric work. Shaban leaned back in his saddle, running final checks on the bike system. Its center-mounted heavy bolter keyed up, and the bracing clamps slid back. He rose above the rockcrete, buoyed by a thrumming layer of grav-repulsion. All around him his brothers did the same, and the hangar filled with the oily stink of thrusters belching smoke.
"Think they will fire on us?"
Vox Jochi, bobbing alongside him.
"We find out now,"
replied Shaban, before pressing the throttle down. His bike leapt forward like a living thing, growling down the long hangar exit ramp, streaking out through the atmospheric shield and into the silent void beyond. His brotherhood followed close behind. 500 bikes shot clear of the Kaljian's hull and dispersed into the vacuum, each one trailing a line of sooty backwash. Shaban increased speed, and the looming shape of the sword storm wheeled above him. The bike swayed as he pulled it round, aiming for a run along the near hull edge and towards the ventral shuttle bays. Huge sensor towers, hanging from the battleship's underside like stalactites, raced by as he reached full velocity. The Brotherhood tore towards the ingress points, spread out wide, just as if they were horsemen tearing across open grassland. Shaban saw the first set of bay doors race noiselessly towards him and ran a sensor sweep on the entrance zone.
"Blast shielded,"
he voxed, drawing closer to the hull. He hurtled further down towards the battleship's stern, veering between communication nodes and jutting weapon housings. The Brotherhood swept past the first docking bay and powered on to the next.
"They will all be protected, Khan," remarked Jochi calmly. "Are we going to have to fight our way in?"
Shaban tilted to avoid a massive lance barrel.
"If we have to."
He shot downwards, aiming for the swordstorm's keel. A thicket of sensor vanes hung vertically, barring his path, and he picked up speed to clear them. They did not have long. The sensorium officers on the flagship would already be tracking them, frantically voxing the Kaljian to demand why so many flyers had been launched. The window of operation between them taking off and Hasek taking precautions would be measured in seconds. He pulled under the keel point, missing the tip of a sensor vane by a helm's width and hauling the bike around hard. The far side of the sword storm yawned away above him, vast and precipitous.
700 meters,
he voxed, locking on to the next docking bay.
Full throttle.
The Brotherhood streaked towards it, hugging the battleship's hull plating and swerving between the hundreds of protuberances and snaking trenches. The first flickers of lasfire blazed past them like shooting stars, barely visible at such extreme velocities. Cannons further up the battleship's cyclopean flank opened up first, swung back tight against the ship's side to target the hurtling speeders. Several found their mark, sending bikes careering into the hull plating or spinning, thrusters blazing into the void.
"They dare!"
Vox Jochi, outraged. Shaban poured on more power, cleaving to the underside of the sword storm as close as possible. He had hoped deep down that his Legion brothers would not have used their weapons to prevent them from boarding. If they were truly serious, it would take them just a few minutes to obliterate the entire Brotherhood.
"They cannot mean to do that. Even now, with all that has happened, they cannot mean to do more than warn us off."
The next bank of docking bays was shielded and closed, all of them too heavily buttressed to be blasted through quickly.
"Spread out,"
he voxed, scanning ahead for a way in. Only seconds remained until the situation would become irretrievable.
"Use full hull width. Maintain speed."
He pushed his bike even closer to the ship, grazing the underside of an exhaust vent and nearly clipping a power conduit. The lasfire picked up, finding its range and growing in density. The gunners were good and well used to tracking objects at high velocity. More bikes exploded, tumbling through the void before crashing in silent streaks of igniting promethium. His helm display flashed red, stabbing at him with the call signs of the dead.
"Faster!"
he snarled, unwilling to pull away. There would be no second chance. His brothers knew it, and followed his lead tightly. Their engines flared in the dark, burning almost beyond their tolerances.
"Khan!"
Vox Jochi through gritted teeth. For the first time, he sounded unsure.
"When do we..."
Then Shaban saw it on his helm display. A single docking port, unshielded, unbarred.
"That's it! Follow me in,"
Shaban ordered, swinging his bike upwards and kicking on towards the signal. He tore through the oncoming hail of lasfire, jerking and ducking to avoid the beams, sweeping past a whole row of angled torpedo launchers and streaking towards the signalled port. He had no idea why it was unprotected, but it saved them the ruinous task of trying to blast an entrance. Its marker lights were on, strobing into the open jaws of the docking chamber, beckoning them in, as though someone on the flagship actively wanted them to break the cordon. Shaban kicked the retros at the last moment, skidding around in zero gravity, then powering into the Swordstorm's inertia bubble. His bike's grav plates whined instantly, adjusting to the rapidly moving environment, before locking on to the docking bay floor and righting him. Shaban slewed into the chamber beyond, swinging his bike about and decelerating hard. The hangar stretched off around him, almost empty save for a few Arvus landers and a bulk shuttle held in place by docking clamps. He could already hear warning klaxons sounding. The Brotherhood followed him in, dropping to the deck as they swooped under the docking bay roof. The riders killed their engines, leaping from the saddle before the last of the roaring had died down, and their mounts coasted to a steaming standstill. Shaban kicked his bike away and sped for the doors at the far end, drawing his glaive from his back as he ran. The energy field spat into life.
"To me!"
he roared, noting how many life sign runes were streaming through the hangar. More than 200 had already broken through. Many more were coming in. Jochi reached him, sprinting hard, bolt pistol in one hand and tulwar in the other.
"Command, Bridgelock," he voxed to the rest of his brethren. 19 levels up."
Shaban nodded, reaching the exit ramp and powering up it towards a huge pair of half-open blast doors.
"We'll be there in no time," he grinned.
The last of the Saiknuin disappeared into the ruins, leaving nothing but ghostly trails of witchlight over burned-out buildings. The Khan watched them go. His blade ran with luminous ichor, dripping in teardrop clumps to the dust. Dozens of carcasses littered the earth around him, some still twitching in jerky displays of insect agony. Killing them had been straightforward enough. It was a matter of belief as much as anything, attuning himself to the potential that existed within him, just as it did in all of his brothers. They were, every one of them, creatures of the warp, whatever Malkador told the masses, and whatever Russ or Angron might like to believe about themselves.
"It runs in our minds, like blood in a vein."
Qhinjar and the surviving Keshig warriors gathered around him. As he turned to acknowledge them, the Khan noticed more silver flashes running along the horizon. The rumble of thunder had grown louder during his absence. The clouds were racing now, jostling like herds of Adun on the stampede. Qhinjar bowed.
"Khagan, are you...
Do you have a fix on the Swordstorm?" the Khan asked, glancing back up at the unquiet skies.
He could sense the static in them, laced with strands of vivid ether essence.
"Not yet."
The Khan turned back and caught sight of the Thousand Suns legionary among the others. For a terrible moment, he thought that it was Ahriman. He wore the same crimson armor and bore the same arcane sigils.
"You," he said. "Who are you?"
The sorcerer bowed.
"Revuel Arvida, Lord. Fourth Fellowship."
The Khan regarded him. He could see the vigor of the psychic soul glowing inside him like a candle flame, weakened by privation, but still vivid.
"You are the last?"
"As far as I know," said Arvida. "Unless..."
"There is nothing down there," the Khan said. "Not anymore."
"Did you find what you were looking for?" asked Qhinjar.
The Khan thought on that. It was hard to know what to say. He had never known what he was looking for, in truth. He had hoped, as had always happened in the past, that the quarry would fall into view before him, leaping away on the edge of sight, poised for him to run down. Now that he had ended the chase, though, it was hard to decide what kind of thing had been encountered.
"I know more than I did," he said.
"Then who is the traitor?"
The Khan smiled bleakly.
Everything we were told was the truth. This world bears the kill mark of Russ, just as we were told. But Magnus had already fallen, just as we were told. Behind them all stands Horus, the Lord of Primarchs. He looked up into the skies. They were all to blame. There is no one traitor. There is only a web, stretching back in time, clutching at us all. And now, it comes for us. Above the column, the clouds began to glow. A vibrant shard of light speared down from the smog, crackling as it hit the stone below. The Terminators turned to face it, powering up their weapons. Quinjar stepped in front of the Khan. Only Arvida remained unmoved.
I have felt him following us for a long time,
murmured the Khan, watching the energy lash and snake. Plumes of dust blew up, snarling in electric arcs and making the air hum with static.
He has been on my heels since Ulanor. He has finally caught up.
The Keshig moved into a loose semicircle, poised to strike. None of them would move before the order was given, though. They were the extension of the Khan's will.
Do not try to prevent him, said the Khan calmly, watching dark shapes solidify within the raging wall of light. He is beyond all of you. How could he not be? He is my brother.